Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's a weekly program about health, fitness, nutrition, and all things lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Our first guest today is James Meyer of Meyer Education and Family Services. We'll explore how parents can best talk to the kids about mental health.
And then it's Brian Richards, the executive director of Mountain Town Music and the community conductor of musical affairs. He's going to be talking to us about a music festival coming up in June. It's every Monday evening of June in City Park. Stay tuned to find out what that's about. This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Manning, the Director of Golf at Park Meadows Country Club, a proud KPCW supporter. We've planned an active season of golf events, clinics, and lessons for all players on our Jack Nicklaus course, minutes from Park City Main Street. More information at parkmeadowscc.com.
G'day, this is Ian from Campos Coffee, a proud KPCW sponsor. Our first winter in Park City was awesome. Thanks for accepting us into our community. We're open for breakfast and lunch every day during the mud season. We're just above the ice rink at Park City Mountain. CamposCoffee.com.
This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, we find ourselves in the midst of May, Mental Health Awareness Month, and with the many wonderful presentations and speakers that have already occurred throughout the community, many parents probably find themselves confronted with the knowledge they need to talk with their children about mental health and wondering just how to do so. We're joined by James Meyer of Meyer Education and Family Services, a consulting firm that helps families first assess a child's needs and then how best to craft an approach to address them. James Meyer, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning.
Great to have you here. We've had you here before, sort of when you were kicking off your business, Meyer Family Services, but you've been in the community a long time. You helped build, or you built the Oakley School from the day it opened its doors. Yeah. And now you've transitioned into this program, but talk a little bit about what you do.
So our services center on trying to help families find a roadmap when their child is struggling or their family is struggling in how to manage a child, whether that issue centers on mental health or behavior or education. Many times parents are at a loss to figure out what to do with finding a way to help their child. And what we do is we come in, assess the situation, try to line up services with the child and see what they need. That can be done while a child is at home, but sometimes a child needs to go somewhere to get the help they need.
So you're speaking of things like wilderness programs, and I mean, that's the go-to that I think we all think about and know exists out there, but talk about the spectrum of those types of programs.
Sure. There's everything out there from tutoring here in town all the way up to and including a residential treatment center or hospital stay if somebody needs that. But our approach is really to take it one step at a time and not leap to anything. If we can keep a child at home, we want to keep a child at home. And so there are so many things out there to help kids, and lining them up with the right ones is kind of what we do. Typically, when a child is struggling, what ends up happening is a family goes, okay, I better find out what we can do, and they go to Google. Mm-hmm. And you can find a lot on Google, but you don't know what you're finding. Our job is to go out throughout the country, visit programs, build relationships, get to know the services they offer, and then line up the correct program with the child's needs.
In full disclosure, I have a child who went through a program just like this, and we used a educational consulting service, which I have to say, you know, I went through the entire spectrum of being skeptical, doubting, questioning, wondering, not knowing, and not being prepared with exactly what you're talking about, with enough knowledge to really feel like we as a family were making informed decisions. And and looking back at it, I will tell you that it was critical and essential to get the professional help that we received from the educational consulting service for the benefit of our family and for the benefit of my son. You know, it really was an amazing thing. And what you just said, James, about the assessment component, that's something that it took me a long time to really understand. Not only from the beginning when we were working with the educational consultant, but also when my son was in the wilderness program. He was 14 weeks in the Duchesne Mountains, or the mountains around Duchesne. And, you know, we went into that thinking, oh, well, this is the program. This is what, you know, transforms whatever is dysfunctional within our construct to make it better and functional. And that was not the case either. That was an assessment program as well. So this continues all along. And you work with families throughout that entire process, do you not?
Yes, we do. One of the things that we believe really strongly in is that if a family comes to us and is in need of help, we will work to find them the services they need. And sometimes that is a short term. Maybe they just need to see a therapist here in town. Maybe they just need to access some sort of educational resources, or it may be a much longer process, similar to what your son went through, which is, you know, a time in a wilderness program and then a time in a program after that. But we'll be there with them to help.
And so the kids who, or there's this, again, one of the things that kind of jumped out at me through the whole process was a lot of families go in thinking that there's a problem with their child. And why don't you speak to what the real issue tends to be, and how do you deal with that?
Sure. Many times the issue that kids are dealing with is a family systems issue. It's not just about the child's behavior. It's how people react. And then what ends up happening over time is people end up adapting to the child's behavior and adapting their parenting. And pretty soon they're walking on eggshells, and pretty soon the whole family system revolves around the identified patient, which might be the child, but it's really the family system that needs work. We can come in and help look at that family system from sort of an outsider's perspective and say, this doesn't seem right. And how can we sort of shift the paradigm in your family to help move it in a more positive direction?
And you get it right out there in the beginning by calling it Meyer Education and Family Services. I mean, it's
absolutely
right there. It's family services. Mm-hmm. Do you find resistance or denial?
Yes and no. Typically, by the time a family's contacting us, they know there's something wrong and they want help. So people are often very willing to recognize that there's a problem, but change is hard. And change is a difficult thing for people to go through. And if people are willing to make sacrifices and alter their approaches, oftentimes the results are extraordinary. And the changes are incredibly positive. You know, it's the old adage, though, if you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten. So
we're not given a handbook when we're sent home with our new baby from the hospital or wherever. And most of us, you know, we reach out and we read a book here and we read a book there, and we just, it's just a mishmash of what we think might work and, you know, things that are, I don't know, parenting, family systems that may be a trend even. You know, there's a book that comes out and it's kind of trendy for a year, and it's all about permissive parenting. And then we find out, oh, whoops, we did that wrong.
Sure.
We weren't supposed to be permissive parents. We were supposed to provide a framework and a structure and discipline. You know, so where do we go? How do we figure it out?
Well, I think it's very different for every family, for sure. My experience has been, if you can have a connection with your children, and whatever that connection is, if it's authentic and honest and real, your kids will respond well. the hard part, I think, comes in when there is a societal construct that a child has to behave a particular way, or parents want their child to behave a particular way, and there's never dialogue about that. And what ends up happening is there's sort of parallel play. Parents go in one direction and the child goes in another, and then there ends up being conflict. So what we always encourage parents to do is have open, honest communication with their children about how they're feeling and about their expectations. Don't assume that your children know what you're thinking, and don't assume that they know the right thing. It's always right. I talked to my son last night about making sure he has his seatbelt on, which I talk to him about all the time. And I'm going to keep talking to him about that because it's important.
Yeah. Yeah. This is another thing. I think we often, I mean, it's not a difficult conversation to have about your seatbelt, but there are many difficult conversations that we broach and we'll get through and we'll go, phew, okay, I checked the box on that one. I've talked to him about that really difficult thing. Don't need to revisit that. And we don't, you know, but, and especially because they don't want to have those conversations with us. But as you say, you have it. Have it many times, mm-hmm. over and over and over. Mm-hmm. And
There's a lot of evidence that suggests that if you're having those difficult conversations with kids, that it's sinking in. And they're not fun to have.
Yeah.
Your child will roll their eyes and avoid you and say, we've already talked about this. That's true. And it's okay. You're still building a relationship with them.
I'm sitting here just thinking of all the times that I've thought, the conversations as a parent that I've had, like, oh, okay, I had that conversation. Whew, we made it through that. They rolled their eyes. They said, I've already said this, but I always say to them, no, but I haven't said it in this sort of way before. There's a different twist on it. And that was 3 years ago when you were 13 or whatever. But it is hard to continue to revisit it. And what are your most effective tools that you give to parents about how to start the conversation? That's where I have a difficult time. How to even start it?
Well, you have to have the conversation when the child's in a receptive place. So when the child has broken curfew and has come home at midnight and they were supposed to be home at 11 and they think 11 is a stupid time to be home, and you're upset because they blew you off and didn't come home for curfew, that's not the time to have the conversation. But the next day when they're calmed down and you're calmed down, it's very appropriate to have that conversation of, hey, this is about expectations and they didn't line up and let's not do this again. I would also try to share with parents that if you can pull out your own needs out of the situation as much as possible and focus more on what the child needs, that can often go a long way. And that's hard to unbundle at times with families, is figuring out where your needs end and your child's begin. So the more you can do that, the better.
That's that parallel course you were talking about and where they might diverge and the parents' desires and wishes are different for their child than their child's authentic desires and wishes. And that can, boy, that's a tricky, as you say, tough to deconstruct. And do you help families with that deconstruction? And do you find that they're looking for help in that area?
Very much so. A lot of times the work that we'll end up doing is being a bridge between parents and the child. And so the child has certain hopes, dreams, aspirations, and the parents have some, and they don't line up. And if you can get them both to come closer to the middle, sometimes that helps. We spend a lot of time with the kids that we work with, not just the parents, and not making decisions for children, but with children. And at the end of the day, it's typically the parents' decision as to what happens. But the child, if they can have a voice in it, they typically have more of a buy-in into what's going to happen.
Over the decades that you've been involved in this field, I hate to make assumptions, but it seems obvious that our environment and the challenges that families and children and parents face are very different today than they were, say, 30 years ago. Everybody's carrying a personal communication device that has the power of a supercomputer, and they can connect all sorts of things. And I see a lot of kids and a lot of adults, quite honestly, who have a difficult time, what I would call being present, because they're not present. They're present with their device rather than with what's happening in the dialogue, in the conversation, in the group that they're in. Is that really happening? Can you observe that? And does that create, more pressure for this diverging of paths and desires between the kids and the parents? Because parents could be like, hey, when I was a kid, we didn't do that, you know, and I have heard myself say that a time or two. Maybe parents have always said that, and maybe parents are always going to say that, and the environment will always be evolving into something different. I just wonder if we're in a repeating pattern or if there really is something different that creates a different type of challenge.
Well, I think the last thing you just stated, Tim, is very accurate. I think we are in a repeating pattern, and I think there's something different. So I think it's both. Every generation feels that the previous generation feels that the new generation doesn't get it and has a different world. I mean, that's been going on forever.
Yep.
My parents feel like I didn't get it. I mean, I probably didn't, but... And then you also have this very unique world that we're in now that has the world at our fingertips, and we are not connected interpersonally the way we used to be, because we don't need to be. There's a very good book by Sebastian Junger called Tribe, which talks about the need for community and the need for a tribe, and that's what our society has lost. It's a very short book, very good book, and I would encourage folks to read it. But really... The rise of technology, the rise of the cell phone and things like that have made it so that we don't need to rely on other people as much. And that's not a good thing. That doesn't help kids. It doesn't help community. It doesn't help us moving forward.
So do you think that we, in the case of a tribe, for example, we don't have real interpersonal tribes that we're looking across the table at someone else and having a conversation? These tribes exist sort of virtually online, mm-hmm. and they're not real.
That's right.
They are virtual.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you don't need to rely on somebody else to figure out a problem, because you can go to your hand, to your cell phone, to figure out that problem. It really speaks to sort of the deconstruction of a lot of what we would call a society.
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the last conversation you had with four people where one person wasn't on their phone,
mm-hmm.
it's hard,
right,
to have those conversations. And Tim, to your point, people being present, I think that's a difficult thing. And I just think it's going to get harder. I don't think people are going to wake up one day and go, you know what, I'm going to put my cell phone down for the day. That's just not the way the world works. So we have to find ways around it.
What about you could argue that if you become less dependent on other people, you said, we don't need others as much as we have in the past. That might be a good thing from an evolutionary standpoint, greater independence, greater connection to more resources, more knowledge. But it's only good if you believe that we are not essentially and at our core social creatures, which is the tribe argument Sebastian's
mm-hmm.
making
mm-hmm.
in his book.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's fundamental and foundational, then we're chipping away at the foundation.
Yes. Yep. No, I think you're seeing it very clearly in terms of that. And we are social creatures. If you look back through the evolution of humankind, they're small groups together working for a common goal. We don't do that much anymore.
It's interesting, going back to the tribe and the project by, I think it was 2 years ago, Park City Leadership was his Neighborhood Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting to me that we had to have this organized, structured thing that we, establish as a campaign, a particular campaign to just get together with your neighbors. But I had a driveway party for my neighbors. And there were many people that I had never met that were my neighbors. And it felt so good to have that connection. And of course, we all said, let's do this on a regular basis. And did we? No, we didn't. But hopefully, you know, you feel, you get little glimpses of that connection to tribe, and it feels good. And hopefully your children see you doing that. I want to go into mental health and what we've learned. If you see an evolution, we talked about this earlier, that I was seeing posts about the suicide last week of Soundgarden singer Chris Cornell, and how I notice a change in evolution in understanding about suicide and mental illness. Do you believe that to be true?
I do think that there is much more information out there, and that I think that mental health is changing rapidly. And some of that has to do with technology changing the brain, but people's understanding of things. And you and I spoke about this, Lynn. You know, suicide used to be viewed as a very selfish act, and now it's viewed more as a very different, a different component to things. It's not as much about choice as it is about mental health.
Yeah. So there was, within the Connect Summit County May Mental Health Awareness Month, it has just been so amazing, but we saw Kevin Hines speak at the Jim Santee Auditorium last week, and I was just looking up, trying to find the speaker who spoke before him, an Australian guy, can't find his name, nor can I recall it, but he was someone, and his friend who died by suicide was one of those examples of the model person that no one had any idea that there was trouble, that there was depression. Is depression among our youth, adolescents, is it visible? Is it not visible? Should we as parents be able to see it?
I think it really depends on the child. And it's a very hard thing, I think, because adolescents are not, it's not cool to sort of ask those questions. And so we really need to look after each other in terms of it, because there are multiple instances of kids that everybody goes, what happened? We thought everything was fine. And then when you really drill down, you find out that the child really felt very alone. And there may have been a mental health component to it that's hard. So I'm not sure in terms of it, but I will say that I would much rather have the conversation and have a child upset at me and have them be alive than not have the conversation.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think ties into mental health, but there's a connection between mental health and emotional health. And sometimes I think everybody needs to acknowledge that there's a lot going on with adolescents. And one of the things that was kind of brought home to my family and my son in particular, and he really grasped this, and it resonated with him. And I think it made a huge difference is they did a workshop from a neuroscientist or doctor, and who said that the plasticity of a adolescent brain is very elastic, and it's developing until the age 24. And anything that you do to your brain, any substance you put in, any hormones that are going through, everything is informing the development of the brain. Anything in your environment, your behavior, until age 24, and then it becomes pretty hardwired. And I'm wondering what you know and think about that. Is there sort of like a 24-year-old, hey, we got through 24 and now we're good to go, if the child and the family are in a pretty functional state at that point? Mm-hmm. Is it kind of smoother sailing from that point on? And how important is it from those adolescent years up to age 24?
Well, I think that there is a certain age that people become, the brain begins to sort of settle in, if for lack of a better term, and not be, when a child is 14 or 15, they basically don't have a frontal lobe. They don't make decisions, that are anything, they're not well thought out. They're impulsive. So I do believe that when a child gets to a certain age, 23, 25, somewhere around there, things tend to calm down. Now, with that stated, the things that can impact a child even after that and leading up to that are very, very, there's a multitude of them that can happen. So, I believe that it's very important for kids to try to keep away from things that are going to impact their brain development as much as possible, for as long as possible. And all the evidence out there suggests that. So when, you know, kids come up and say, well, it's legal now in Colorado. Well, it's still not legal for anybody under 21.
Yeah.
Right. And same with alcohol. It's not legal for anyone under 21. And those rules are not bad. And they're designed, I think more with the actions of people, you know, driving and things like that. But for brain development, staying away from substances like that is a really good thing.
And Lynn, correct me if I'm wrong, I've been paying attention to the school budget recently, and isn't a lot of the budget going toward new personnel, and that new personnel is focused on what I would consider to be the well-being, the emotional and mental well-being of students in the form of counselors, which I think is an amazing thing to have seen happen in a fairly short period of time in this community, because, you know, I've always looked and said, well, we should have more support for the emotional health and the mental health of the students, and it would be nice to bring that in, but gosh, in our system it would be so costly and it would transform the whole system, and here's our school district doing it. It astounds me that they have been able to make that shift.
It's fantastic, and you know, my hope is that it continues, because our kids need it in the world we're in today.
Okay, so I'm a parent who has just seen a bunch of presentations during this May Mental Health Awareness Month, and I decide, well, I'm going to have the talk with my child, a teenager, about mental health awareness. And I swear to you, and so I know that there are a bunch of other parents out there thinking the same, you don't know how to start the conversation. And it occurs to me as a human nature, I suppose, to respond in the way, or to come up with, you know, oh, I've seen a lot of these presentations. You know, mental health is very precarious. I just want you to know that I'm here for you. You know, do you ever feel depressed? I mean, it sounds so funny as it's coming out of my mouth, but I swear, I think parents just don't know what to say, myself included. So coach.
So one of the things that we like to talk about is not saying you need to do this, but talking using, you know, I feel statements.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk about it in terms of, you know, I feel at times, sometimes I feel like I'm down. Is that something you've ever felt?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I feel super frustrated when you behave this way. So you're not telling the child how to behave, you're telling them how you feel, and then leaving it as an opening to have a conversation with them. So I feel statements is a good way to go about doing it. Having a conversation about something else as a lead-in to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking with so-and-so, and this came up. What are your thoughts about that? Being comfortable with some silence with your children is hard also. Asking a question and then giving them time to process it and waiting for the answer rather than filling in the gap for them. So rather than saying, well, I'm not saying that this is that you're depressed. Don't,
yeah.
Know. So giving them the time to reflect and answer honestly, and then not judging that response to them. If they say, no, I don't care about that. It's stupid. I don't care. I wouldn't judge that.
Mm-hmm.
But keep that in mind. So for a conversation later on.
Yeah.
You know,
and I only chuckle because I hear myself in everything that you've said, you know, the silence. I can't stand the silence, so I'll fill in with something like that.
Right.
There's a stigma around this, and there has been, and I think it's starting to break down a little bit, which I think is a really good thing. But, you know, Lynn, when we talked to Dylan Klebold's mom, Sue Klebold, you know, it scared us. It scared mm-hmm. everybody, because she was describing a child that didn't show signs, and so she didn't have these conversations. And what I'm coming to learn is that all parents should have some type of a conversation with every child. And it doesn't mean that they're suspicious or think that there's something wrong. It's just that they're having a conversation out of curiosity, out of being, you know, a good parent, out of caring, out of showing, connecting, you know, all these other reasons, because after the Sue Klebold thing, I had a couple of conversations where people were like, look, that's not my child. And if I have that conversation, I'm implying that that child could be somebody who's not showing, who's hiding, who's depressed. And that's not the case necessarily.
That's right. That's somebody's own needs coming into play, right?
And, that's exactly right. It's the parent's frame of reference, and it's being projected onto the conversation that parent's trying to have with the child.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to move away from that.
We need to move away from that, for sure.
And again, that conversation, Sue Klebold, Dylan Klebold, was one of the Columbine shooters. We spoke with her about two to three months ago.
Yeah.
And you can find that conversation on kpcw.org. Really very interesting. We're speaking with James Meyer of Meyer Education and Family Services. A really interesting conversation. We could probably use up the whole hour talking to you. But how do people find you?
You can go on our website, which is www.meyerefs.com. That's E as in education, F as in family, and S as in services.com.
Okay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Really appreciate being here. Thanks.
And we'll be back after these words. We'll be speaking with Brian Richards of Mountain Town Music. He's going to tell us about a great concert series coming up in June and the first week of July when we return.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of contemporary and mountain modern home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake and offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities, and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. We were just speaking with James Meyer of Meyer Education and Family Services. A really interesting conversation and lots of good tools.
Very close to my personal experience and, a really amazing process to go through. And one thing that we didn't get to, but sort of that destigmatizing it all, it's easy to look at that process as, again, having implications of something being wrong. And for me, there was nothing wrong about that process. And my son still carries a little bit of question about, was it good? Was it bad? I look at it as his individual process to get to a place of thriving and engagement, which is where he is. Mm-hmm. And it's just different than how other kids get there as well. And some kids don't get there, which is a tragedy. But it's great when your child does get to that place, but all the paths are different.
Yeah, and just to kind of round out the personal story for you, you have a son graduating from law school in...
University of Chicago Law School this June.
Yeah, so a great success story there. Yeah. Congratulations. Well, Brian Richards is our community conductor of musical affairs and the executive director of Mountain Town Music. Brian now joins us to talk about the entire summer of events, but particularly Noches de Verano, which is coming up beginning on June 5th. It's a Latin music festival, and every Monday in June and the first Monday of July. Welcome.
Yes, that is correct. Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great.
It's beautiful out, isn't it?
Oh, such a great day out.
I think summer is here. I feel it.
Well, it better be because you're riding your bicycle around.
Cruising around, man. Love it. How else to get around? It's the best way, right?
It is the best way.
Indeed. So this is really exciting, this whole Latin music festival concert series. It's going to be at City Park at the Stage beginning on June 5th. Every Monday, which is great because there's not a lot going. Well, you would know.
There's not too much going on Mondays. We have a classical series that we do a little bit later in the summer. So the Latino series will sort of segue into that. But it's a really nice night to do it. You know, we chatted a little bit at the beginning of this process about which night would be best. And, you know, we thought that Mondays would be a good lead into the week. You know, a lot of the Latino population isn't necessarily working on that Monday, whereas as the week moves on, you know, they're a little bit busier with, you know, work obligations.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to try it out on Mondays and see how it flies.
And so part of the catalyst for this series was you went to speak to the Latinos in Action, which is a group of, I think it's also junior high, but mostly in high school, kids who are sort of emerging as leadership within the Latino community, and you kind of asked for their ideas.
Well, it actually started off because of a little friendly political discourse I had with a friend of mine, Jonathan Keller, who opened up Orion's Music Shop with me right after the election in November. And he was a staunch Trump supporter. And we chatted a little bit about, like, what are we in for? And he kind of gave me, you know, his ideas. And we had a great conversation. And at one point, he's like, well, what's important to you? And I said, you know, the equitable treatment of people. And we sort of kind of, you know, engaged on that for a little bit. And I started talking about the Latino population here in Park City and how it's a little bit underserved, in my opinion. And he said to me, he's like, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, nothing. And, you know, it sparked something, you know, in me. And I said, listen, I have the ability, I have the influence to be able to create something. And so how can I do that? And so I had a retreat in Lava Hot Springs with my board in late November. And we chatted a little bit about it. And I said, you know, I'm going to reach out to the high school and the Latinos in Action students specifically, because I felt like they might have an enthusiasm about it. They might be able to throw a little bit of energy into it and legitimize it. So I called the teacher. I went in and chatted with the class in early December. And we had a really healthy conversation with, I think, about 30 students, you know, about, is there a need? Where should it be? What should it be about? How should we do it? And at the end of the class, I challenged some students. I said, hey, who wants to get involved and make this happen? Because I don't want to do it. I want you guys to do it. I'll hold your hand and I'll be there every step of the way. But ultimately, I need someone to champion it and make it their own. Because I think, again, it's not just some, you know, gringo going in and saying, hey, let's do some Latin music because the rap text tells me I need to, or I need to, in order to get funding, I need to do something for the community. I wanted it to be meaningful. I didn't want to just do it for the sake of doing it. I wanted it to have legitimate impact. And I felt like the only way to do that was to have kids involved. And so I had these two girls, Evelyn and Charlene, who volunteered, and we've been meeting, I think, every Tuesday since, you know, right after Sundance, we started, you know, really jumping into it. And they've been amazing. They've worked really hard, and they've sort of reinvigorated me. You know, seeing their youthful enthusiasm every Tuesday has kind of gotten me a little bit fired up. And so it's been a great way to sort of engage my passions again. And so it's been a really great process. We've put a lot of work into it. And it's been a little bit stressful because it's new. And, you know, there's no roadmap for it. And we're trying to do a little bit more than we normally would do. We have food trucks. We have art projects. We have music. And so it is really a weekly festival that celebrates not only the Latino community, but our community as a whole and the diversification of our community. And so this isn't just for the Latino community. This is for all of us. This is for all of us to come together, hold hands in solidarity, and appreciate what we have.
Because it's great music.
It's killer music.
Really,
it's fun.
Great music.
It's fun. You know, we got some great bands. And you know, that was a little bit of a process because we don't generally feature Latino bands, and we had to go out and sort of, you know, scour Salt Lake City to see who's playing the music. And a lot of those bands are used to getting paid a little bit more than we had in the budget. And so we had to convince them that, hey, listen, this is a really cool idea. There's a lot of support behind it. Come up and do it for the kids. And, you know, if we can grow this thing, maybe in the future we can get sponsors on board, we can get more grant funding, and we can pay your normal fee.
And is the music focused for kids? Is it kind of, does it have an age focus to it?
No, it's just kind of like everything we do. It's for all ages.
Right.
You know, I can see you out there dancing, yeah, hula hooping, and Lynn's going to be, you know, shaking her little booty, and the kids are going to be stoked. I mean, this is what it's all about. This everything that, you know, we program is kid-friendly, family-friendly, danceable, and fun, and this is no different.
So hearing Brian just describe this whole thing and knowing the you know, the efforts that we're making with this demographic and the part of our community and trying to be inclusive. You know, we talk about being an inclusive community and a whole and complete community. And it's a real area of focus for, I think, everyone. And it's risen to a place of prominence at the city, you know, city staff. You're part of that effort. But hearing you, Brian, I just sit there and go, so what was it? Why did it take a conversation with your buddy for you to go, what am I doing and how do I do it with music? And from my perspective of, you know, the community conductor of musical affairs, to step in and say, you know, I can address the underserved component of this community. And why wasn't it done a while ago? I mean, I know it's sort of obvious, but it's also like when I hear it, it's a no-brainer. And it just goes, I go, yeah, that does make a ton of sense. And that's going to be a great event. And I will be there. And why haven't I been for the last 25 years?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. We had brought this up probably 3 or 4 years ago. At a board retreat in Lava, and we chatted a little bit about it. And the issues that we had, you know, 4 or 5 years ago is we couldn't find sort of, again, I keep using the word champion. I couldn't find a champion within the Latino community that would help me and sort of push this thing forward. I couldn't do it alone. I don't think, again, I didn't feel like I could go into the community and sort of say, hey, I want to do this and pull it off and authentically. Like, I want this to be authentic, right? And so when I had trouble finding someone to sort of, you know, be my partner in this, we sort of moved on and moved on to other things, and we tabled it for a little bit. And, you know, yeah, it's probably the political landscape that we're in. You know, sometimes you got to get punched in the face, you know, and get up and say, okay, cool, I can do this. I can make this happen. And I think that's what's happening. I think, you know, we get very complacent in our community and we take a lot of things here for granted. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all guilty of it. And until you see, you know, the emotions that are going on within that community, the people being scared, people being fearful, people, you know, not knowing if they could walk out their front door. I think it takes that sometimes to, you know, get us motivated and get us, you know, to the point where we can do something to make a difference. And so it's unfortunate that that's the case, but, you know, here we are. And I think, you know, they're doing the Latino Arts Festival at the library on June 3rd. Mm-hmm. Park Silly Sunday Market is going to have a Latino theme for their first market on June 3rd. So we're trying this year to make it sort of this weekend celebration and build it organically so that, you know, next summer it's a little bit bigger and we all sort of, you know, get together and unify a little bit and make it a little bit bigger each summer. You know, as we've had this conversation, we're trying to grow this organically and again, make it feel real.
We've talked about the community and how it's ripe for certain ideas and certain issues, and it has to be fertile ground. And sometimes, you know, the issues come before the ground is fertile and ready, and sometimes it's the perfect time. And I struggle with that. I wonder why, you know, right now is the perfect time. But I get what you're saying. You know, the landscape has changed, the political landscape nationally, so we're focusing locally. And with that additional focus locally, it's led us to this place of doing things that I kind of wish we'd been doing all along, but at least we're doing them.
Have you had the conversation again with your friend, your former partner at Orion's Music?
Yeah, you know, he actually, he wanted to come out and give a little, you know, chat before the first concert and kind of explain his feelings and how this came about, and he couldn't make it happen, but he's really excited. You know, again, that's the positive thing that can come out of discourse about, you know, not necessarily holding steady and hard to a thought process, right? Okay, this is what I think, so that's the be-all, end-all. And again, that's what we need to do more of. We need to have friendly conversations with people that we don't agree on. You know, I have my kids. My kids are fighting about who's better, LeBron James or Stephen Curry. They did it all night last night. I'm like, why don't you just appreciate that Stephen Curry's awesome and LeBron James is awesome? But that is one of the problems with our society is that we don't have intelligent discourse and agree to disagree. And so, you know, I think Jonathan's really excited and it wouldn't have happened. I mean, it really probably wouldn't have happened without me picking up the phone one night and saying, hey, Johnny, let's chat.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow. So the music itself, and I'm interested in, I mean, you know music inside and out, and I love Latin music, and I know some types of music I would have chosen. The music that you were oriented towards, that you were thinking of booking, did it end up being the same as the Evelyn and Charlene's choices from Latinos in Action or any of the other input you got from the kids? I mean, they have a younger slant, but the music itself.
Yeah, it was an interesting process. Again, there's not a ton of Latino bands out there, at least that I found. And so we were forced to kind of go with what we found a little bit more than I had thought. I thought that we would come up with a list of, you know, 10 to 12 bands, and we would listen to them and be like, oh my God, these guys are awesome. This would fit amazingly. People are going to love this. But that wasn't necessarily the case. You know, we worked with this guy, Coco Garcia, down in Salt Lake City, who runs a Latin band connection, and he got us in touch with three different bands. So we have a couple salsa bands. We have a traditional norteño Mexican band. Mm-hmm. We have a mariachi band. And then we have a more rock-oriented band. So it's actually going to be pretty cool because it's very diverse, the selections that we have. And I'm actually looking forward to discovering and learning more about the various Latino acts and bands that are out there and the different genres, because you know, I used to sell, you know, Latino music at Orion's, tons of it, but I never really listened to it, you know? And so I'm looking forward to really sort of immersing myself in the music this summer. I'm definitely stoked to see a lot of these bands. And when I listened to them, it just felt good. You know, there's just something invigorating about salsa music and the horn sections and the dancers. And I think I got this Latin roots band, and they were one of the bands that were like, hey, we get paid like $4,000 a show. And I'm like, well, I can pay you like $900. And he's like, well, we're bringing up 12 players, you know, and it barely covers gas money. I'm like, wow, 12 players? No kidding. And, you know, I went back and listened to it, and I'm like, they are funky. Yeah. And so, you know, it's going to be cool.
Are they bringing everyone?
They're bringing everybody.
Wow.
You know, they're going to take it as an opportunity to come up and do some filming and take some pictures, and they're going to sort of document their show and use it as a promotional tool. So they figured out a way to take advantage of it. And then,
what's the name of that band?
They're called the Latin Roots Band.
Okay. And they are when?
They're June 26th.
Okay. Sounds great.
I'm out of town, June
26th. Oh, come on. Well, guess what? Do their video on it.
Yeah.
You can watch it on YouTube.
Exactly.
You know,
and
then
live stream it.
Exactly. we might do some live streaming. We'll probably do that. You know, that's another thing. Like, we've been connecting with the kids. It's like, so, Snapchat? What's Snapchat? Like, how do I take advantage of Snapchat? I mean, really, like, you know, and so we've been sort of engaging in different ways to promote the concert series, not only to, you know, an older demographic. Like, they looked over at me, they goes, well, old people like you, they use Facebook. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And, you know, how do we also get the word out to the Latino population? You know, how do we get it? So my biggest concern right now is, like, getting the word out there. And this is kind of the start of it, you know, getting the word out there. But I also want to mention that the Kimball Arts Center has come on board with us, and they are curating and providing 5 culturally relevant art projects each week that are going to be geared towards kids. And it's awesome, because that was a component that I was struggling with for a mm-hmm. little bit, because we really did want to have an arts component of this series. And I reached out to them, and they said, oh, cool, we totally want to be on board. It's an awesome opportunity for our outreach. It's an awesome opportunity for our volunteers. And so they're going to be there every Monday with some pretty cool projects.
This is all a conversation to have surrounding the whole arts and culture master plan of Park City and Summit County. And we do a spot once a month with Hadley Dynack and whoever she wants to bring on. And this is the finest example of why art and culture is so important in this community. And it is about making those connections between people and bringing our community together.
Absolutely.
And you're doing it.
We're all doing it,
yeah.
You know, and that's the great thing is you can pick up the phone and make a phone call and say, hey, listen, this is what we got going on. It'd be awesome to have you on board. And people say, heck yeah, sign me up. What can I do? And, you know, I think that's what's awesome about the arts and cultural community, the community in general, is that if you ask for help and you reach out, people will step up to the plate. And it's a pretty awesome. Like, I mean, I find that in, you know, again, this bonanza flats, you know, everyone's sort of rallying behind that, the leadership class. And we live in an amazing, amazing community that will get behind a lot of stuff. So I encourage everybody out there that's listening to come out to this Latino concert series because it's going to be cool.
June 5th is the first Monday, and it's every Monday in June, plus the first Monday in July,
July 3rd. And then July 3rd, we're going to do, we haven't figured it out, it's either going to be pinatas or flags, but we're going to do the art project that we do that night. We're actually going to hang all over the park so that when people start coming up for the 4th of July, there'll be these sort of Latino-themed decorations everywhere. So we're really stoked about that. And we could use people that night to come and help us, you know, decorate the park with art projects.
Right.
And we're talking the park with the bandstand, which is just to the north of the skate park and by Miners Hospital.
Exactly. So the music will take place in the bandstand and the art projects will take place in that little gazebo
barbecue
with the
area.
Grill.
Okay, great. Just a few minutes left. And I wanted to quickly say, I know that you have, because it's the first year, you haven't really actively solicited funding for this in particular, but if, but you will take funding.
Well, if anybody wants to get involved and be a partner of this series, you know, certainly give me a call, 435-962-3333, or email me at mountaintownmusic@gmail.com. And I want to touch upon why we stopped getting sponsors is there was some concern that the Latinos were afraid to gather. And so once I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, really? Like I had never thought about that. And so, you know, I chatted with the girls. I said, is this true? And she said, yeah, you know, my mom is really scared. And some of the people that live in our community are fearful of, you know, getting together all in one place. And I said, whoa, you know, I had to hit the brakes. Like I didn't want to reach out to sponsors and have them put their name on something. And all of a sudden, you know, ICE agents are coming up. And so there was a little bit of concern. And I had to educate myself and I had to educate the girls. And so we called the city and Wade Carpenter. And that's, I think that's when you got involved at mm-hmm. first. And so the girls, we all met with Wade to sort of address those concerns. And even walking into those meetings, I didn't know whether we were going to go forward with this. Like if I felt and the girls felt uncomfortable, we were going to pull the plug. And so, you know, again, that was another thing that the students and the girls got to experience was, again, this really intelligent and thoughtful conversation and discourse with, you know, the authority mm-hmm. and said, hey, you know, they got to ask very poignant questions and get those questions answered eye to eye, which I thought was really cool.
Right. Yeah. And the result of that was that ICE doesn't come to town for things like cruising through concert series.
Exactly. You know, yeah. They don't want to cause a scene, you know, and maybe we don't want to get into that discussion right now. That's a different conversation
yeah.
for a
hey,
different
let's
day.
Quickly go over your member barbecue in Piola
yes.
on June 2nd.
Yes.
And then the Jambalaya on June 3rd.
Yep. So we are kicking off the summer. Our first concert is next Friday night in Piola, June 2nd with Lash LaRue. And we're inviting all of our Vibe Tribe members to come out there at 5:30. We're going to have hamburgers, hot dogs, beer, snacks. And we provide a lot of fun. It's a pretty cool deal. And so if you've never been to Piola, I mean,
you're missing out.
It's amazing. Like, it's my favorite
Hasn't
place to spend.
Hasn't everybody been to Piola?
I would say no. I would hope all of the KPCW listeners have been to Piola.
You know, I struggle with whether I want to promote it too much because it's such a you know, a nice setting out there, and it's pretty casual right now. I don't want to let the secret out of the bag. But, yeah, we're having a killer kickoff next Friday night with a barbecue. And then our annual Jambalaya is Friday night. Again, it's a member kickoff. Featuring one of my favorite live bands from San Francisco, the Monophonics. We have a member party from 7:30 to 9:30, which is available only to our members. And then the Monophonics is open to the public. It's $15. And you can become a Vibe Tribe member at mountaintownmusic.org.
Brian Richards, Mountain Town Music, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Miller Orthodontics is a proud supporter of The Randy Barton Show. Since 1988, my wife and I have provided a combined 45 years of orthodontic care. For our Invisalign patients, we provide digital scanning and imaging technology that eliminates the need for wet molds of your teeth. More information is at m2ortho.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com.
Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
We want